Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil. Hey, Robbie.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
Good.
Good. Good, good. Here we are.
Here we are.
I feel like post-Future's End Part 1 and 2 is like, that's a milestone, that episode. It was so epic. I feel like now that we've gone over that hump, I'm really interested to see what happens.
So in a way, you have a Delta Flyers hangover because we had such a milestone and such a great show. And then now we're like, okay.
Yeah, I wonder if it can keep up. And I wonder, I'm curious to see. I remember we're doing Warlord, right?
Mm-hmm.
Warlord. Yeah. Okay. It'll be interesting to see, very interesting to see if it can keep up. Like, you know, I thought Future's End was amazing. So,
yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, on the current news front, you are packing. You're getting all your packing done.
I'm about to leave Vancouver very shortly. I've been here 8 months filming on two different shows, Resident Alien, which a lot of people have seen, and we got a season two pickup, and that's exciting.
Congratulations.
I know. It's hard to do these days, you know, to break through the clutter. There's so much content out there, so... Resident Alien seems to have, connected for people. So it's great. Yeah.
So one of the things that Megan and I do whenever I'm not in Calgary is we make time to watch like a show together, you know, we'll watch something on Netflix, like a rerun or something. And so, so she chose a show that she used to love as a kid, Third Rock from the Sun.
Oh, that's fun.
If you remember the John Lithgow show, and I'm wondering if your showrunner for Resident Alien was a big fan of that show, because if you think about that show, those are aliens in human bodies on Earth, but it's a comedy, you know, yours has comedic elements, but that's pure sitcom. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's John Lithgow, French Stewart, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Kristen Johnson. So it's four aliens in human bodies. And I'm just wondering if your showrunner was influenced by that show.
I don't think so. Our show is based on a comic book. Dark Horse Comics had a comic book called Resident Alien.
Okay.
And it was mostly in the comic book, it had a big emphasis on solving crimes. The alien came to Earth. He was the town doctor, but he got really fascinated with solving crimes. And there was sort of a serialized alien on Earth playing detective. It was quite different and I think much darker, the comic book. And Chris sort of found the comedic way into the show and brought in a lot of different characters. So that's where that one came from. But Third Rock's a great, that I should check it out.
Yeah. 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 And I'm also wondering, maybe the source material, maybe the comic book from Dark Horse was written after Third Rock, possibly.
Maybe.
And if that's the case, maybe that guy was influenced by Third Rock, comic book writer, and decided to make it a darker twisted, you know, put a darker twist on it. So
what's funny, you say, looking at old shows, I stumbled the other day. I saw something about an old sitcom called My Favorite Martian.
Yes.
Do you remember that
Ray,
show? Ray Walston.
Yes,
Ray Walston. Who was on Star Trek, was the Martian. Bill Bixby was, I think it was Bill Bixby?
Are you sure?
I think it was.
Isn't that the Incredible Hulk's character?
Yeah, I think it was him. I'm going to look it up while we talk. My Favorite Martian... Yeah, Bill Bixby, Ray Walston, Pamela Britton, Alan Hewitt, Pat O'Malley. Yeah, and then it goes on and on. But
so this is clearly a very young Bill Bixby, right? Yes, I mean, this must have been a Okay.
But that was my favorite Martian was a similar premise, and it's funny when I stumbled on that show, I was like, oh, I should watch My Favorite Martian before we go back to season two, just to like look at some, you know, some of the stories they told. And
sure,
I think it's a classic fish out of water premise, you know, that it's probably been told in a thousand different ways.
Yeah, that fish out of water story is so it's just something that we're all used to from the earliest. My earliest memory of a fish out of water story that I loved was reading the book A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. If you remember that, novel, that guy just shows up. He's in modern day society and all of a sudden he's transported to medieval times. Okay, so this week's episode is Warlord.
Okay.
And Robbie and I are going to...
Here we go.
Hopefully, we've got our hangover. We've got our Delta Flyers hangover from watching Futures End.
All right, we'll check it out and we'll report back.
Exactly.
See you soon.
All right, guys, Robbie and I are back from watching Warlord.
Mm-hmm.
I just like saying that, Warlord.
Warlord, yeah. Jennifer Lean had a whole different voice than she normally has in that episode.
She did. She did.
It was like her voice changed to this deeper. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was, as I kind of vaguely remembered, she did a real transformation as an actress, you know, to not seem at all like the Kes we had gotten to know. I will say, before we get into the details and everything of this, it was not my favorite episode. Like, okay. There was, I don't know, I struggled. This was a tough one for me on a number of levels, from production design to guest casting to direction. On a lot of levels, I was just like, oh, it just kept missing for me on a lot of levels. We'll go through it. Let's start with some poetry. Just to... Let's ease into it, sort of symbolic way.
Okay. Right, and we have the Delta Flyers hangover, so we need to slowly, reacquaint ourselves with everything. So, all right, let's start off with your haiku, please.
Okay, my haiku for Warlord, season 3, episode of Star Trek Voyager, goes a little something like this, Karen. Consciousness transferred. Whoa, that's not the Kes we know. Game of Thrones in space. There's my haiku.
I like your use of the word whoa. Whoa, that's not the Kes we know.
Game of Thrones.
You could have put anything. You could have said, yikes, that's not the Kes we know.
Yeah.
Okay. Game of Thrones in space. Very nice.
Game of Thrones in space was sort of,
I like,
you know,
that.
Yeah, it was like...
Yeah, that's what it was. It was
murder
struggle.
And power struggle and factions and odd alliances and what marriages and who's, you know, going to be with who. It was all very Game of Thrones.
In fact, I think this is the episode that the showrunner for Game of Thrones, the writer of the Game of Thrones this trilogy, they watched this episode.
Absolutely.
This thinking, isn't... I could put this in medieval times and boom, Game of Thrones. So because of Star Trek Voyager, Game of Thrones fans are happy. There you go. Here's my limerick for Warlord.
Ready.
Tyrion survives by transferring to Kes, wants to rule Ilari and nothing less. Tuvok a spy, Neelix so spry, synaptic stimulator to suppress.
I like Neelix so spry because the dance and the noises he made and all the things that Neelix was in this episode, it was the entire spectrum of Neelix.
It really was.
Wow.
You got a full dosage of Neelix.
Yes, we did.
The teleplay is by Lisa Klink.
Yes.
The story is by Andrew Shepherd-Price and Mark Gaberman. directed by David Livingston.
Mm-hmm.
We start off with an opening scene.
Neelix is getting a foot rub, but we don't really know that. We just see him making noises. Like,
okay, it's a little less cartoony than what you just did.
I was like, oh my God.
No, it sounded happening? Like, oh, it sounded like adult film, basically. I mean, he was just like,
it sounded like Mario Kart, you know, like Mario mixed with some cartoony thing. Yeah, mixed adult films mixed.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
First time ever seeing Talaxian feet.
They're large feet.
Honestly, they look like the feet of a hobbit from the Lord of the Rings trilogy. They look like hobbit feet. They're bigger. They're kind of hairy.
Yes.
The only issue is they clearly made a foot to place over his feet, but they didn't separate the toes. You know what I'm saying? So the toes are still kind of like
part of
the silicone mold or whatever.
It's always risky. It's always risky.
It is risky.
Yeah.
But I felt that pulled me out a little bit. I'm like, well, those are fake. You know, I wanted a little bit more realism on the feet. Hey, you spicing up. Well, we both Paris and Kim take their shots at spicing up the program.
Yeah, we
right?
kind of look at Neelix's program and we're like, yeah, no, this is a little stiff. Maybe if we loosen it up, so we make the drinks a little fancier, we add some reggae, some, you know, Caribbean music.
Yeah.
You bring in the girls' volleyball team.
Right. Kim's sport program, Theta 2.
Yes. Kim's sport program.
You know, but that's a shock to me. I mean, I didn't know Kim even had a sport program.
I didn't
this
either.
Seems more like Paris's sport program, Theta 2.
Everyone thinks that it's really Kim's.
It's really Kim?
Yes, because Paris is he's a down to earth guy. He's just a, you know, a small town guy, Tom Paris,
wants
you know, the family life and to settle down. Harry is the one that has these programs.
Oh, so you're saying Harry's the deviant and not Tom. Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, that's, you can go ahead and put out that theory. I'm going to say that you choose to brighten up the drinks by changing them to Ricari Starbursts, which I think should be a name for a future drinks with Tom segment that you do. You should name
Ricari Starburst. A Ricari Starburst. Okay. Mm,
and then make your own creation from that.
I mean, I'll start even in this opening scene with some of my, I guess, criticism is that, is that clearly we're at some resort, but what is missing here is there a beach? Is there a lake? Is there a ocean? There needed to be a wide shot somewhere in the reverse direction. Clearly we're on stage and so, but there's a way to do that so that you don't feel quite so claustrophobic. And I just felt like it lacked context. Like, what does the rest of this place look like? You know, later on, you know, well, you see people in bathing suits and, you know, swimming things, but where are they swimming? Like, we don't see any of that. It should have been a visual effects shot. So I really missed that. I felt like that opening scene felt cheap. And it just felt like we hadn't shown the context of where this place is. A big wide shot.
Okay, so some type of establishing shot would have been better for you to show, you know, hey, what does it look like other than this tiny little portion of the resort, which everything is shot at, right?
Yes.
My see-through shirt, did you find it sexy?
I found it sexy. Now, yes, it was very sexy, but it also reminded me that this was the episode where I walked onto stage for rehearsal really upset because they had made for me.
This is not it.
I think this is it.
I am almost, this can't be it. No, Robbie.
I'm telling you, this is the episode where they made the little, like the little satin and silk tank toppy strappy thing that looked like it was made for a very delicate woman. And they gave it to Tom Paris to wear to the resort. And I walked out there on stage and the crew's laughing. And I'm like, I am not wearing this. And so that's why they put me in that very generic sort of vest and this is the episode.
So I come to work that day that we're filming in this scene, and Robbie goes, come to my trailer. I'm like, what? So I go to his trailer and he goes, can I just show you the wardrobe that I'm supposed to wear today? And I'm like, sure. And he shows me what literally looks like a very beautiful lady's top. I mean, it is, yes, it is a very slim satin sort of a little strap that goes, yes, over. And the actual top itself is this sort of, it's beautiful black velour velvet material. So oh, yeah, it's very, very delicate, very non-masculine. Yes. And, you know, I mean, you know, we should be open to any type of wardrobe, right? And whether you dress
it
more
just was not
feminine
flattering
or not, but it was not flattering whatsoever.
It was not flattering. It was it just looked like I was wearing someone else's clothes.
Yes. Yes. It seemed very odd.
Yeah. Not Tom Paris.
No. And so I said to Robbie, I said, so what are you going to do? And Robbie's like, well, I guess I'm just going to wear it. And so I was already on set. So then Robbie walks on the set wearing his beautiful lady top. And that's when literally everybody, camera crew, the lighting, all the electricians, every grip, uh-huh, every PA that's around, they just immediately start laughing. And it's not like a snicker. It's not like,
oh no.
It's like a, I mean, guffawing. People are laughing so hard. And now Robbie's turning red. He's embarrassed. Okay. And he's like, you know what? Mm-mm. I'm not wearing this. And I kind of remember you taking it off and just throwing it on the ground almost. Like you were, uh-huh, really upset. And you're like, I'm, you know, call Bob Blackman, call wardrobe and have them find something else for me. And of course they came up, you know, that weird vest combo, that very, very nondescript sort of plain choice that you had, mm-hmm, to wear, the alternate choice, which, you know, doesn't really match my see-through negligee top that I had, but it is what it is. I mean, you got to be comfortable in it. But I will say, yes, do you recognize my top? It's worn before, Robbie. That's the same top.
What was that one?
Yeah, it's from Non Sequitur. So what happens is, huh, Libby, when I wake up on Earth, Libby is wearing my shirt. And you know it's mine because there's a picture, like a little picture by the bedstand that the camera sort of pans by. And it's a picture of myself and Libby. And I am wearing that shirt in that picture that I take with Libby. So it's the same shirt. They used it again in this episode. Exactly the same.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm,
still very, you know, very risque because it is see-through, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and up until
you pulled it off,
point,
though. You totally pulled it off.
Thank you. My svelte body at the time was able to pull it off. Uh-huh. Not so much now, but back then I did. All right, so already in the beginning, you're not happy. Let's move to Kes's quarters. She's called to sick bay by the doctor. There might be some injuries, right?
And she smells a flower. Yeah. I don't know if you noticed. She's sort of smelling a flower at the top of it. So, so they sort of
foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing,
okay,
yes, a little bit, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Mm, I didn't catch that. I didn't catch that. We jump to the bridge. Chakotay asks, can we beam the passengers out through all that radiation? And we're talking about the alien ship that we've encountered that's totally, you know, about to blow up, basically. And as he says that, I'm sort of in the background. It's sort of a two shot. So it's on Chakotay with me in the background at my op station. And he asks about the radiation. And then you can see there's this shimmering going on, a shimmering effect on shirts. And
shirt.
I've always been told when it's time to do an interview, don't wear stripes. Don't wear, like, there's certain colors and certain patterns that will totally mess with the camera. And that definitely mess with the camera. So if you rewatch it, guys, you'll see this crazy shimmery effect.
That means it morays. It's sort of the way that cameras work with the frame rates is, mm-hmm, they can't quite capture the detail in the subtle movement of stripes like that, or reflective stripes. It's a repetitive pattern. And so it sort of gets confused. The computer chip gets confused. And so it sort of creates a weird 3D, like almost like a beam out effect or something.
Okay. You know,
like it just can't sustain, right, all that.
It does.
Detail.
It can't process it. So it's called moray.
That's the term that I've heard used many times by DPs and cinematographers. If something's moraying, it's kind of, it's like a mirage.
So the DP will say, like, okay, so that shirt is moraying.
Yeah.
It's okay. Moraine, put ING on there. Interesting.
So we do beam them over. We get close enough to beam them over and then get out of there without any damage.
Right.
And I thought it was very odd. Even Rebecca, when we were watching, we were like, everybody's smiling in this scene. Like, why are... It was just confusing what was going on. Like, I was smiling. I think Janeway was smiling a little. You were smiling. I was like, are we smiling because we didn't get hurt? Or I don't know. It just seemed like intense. It seems like there should have been an intensity in that scene. And it was more like information, smiling. It was very strange.
Huh.
You didn't notice that?
I didn't notice that, but I'm just thinking about what you said. And I start thinking maybe because we walked in non-uniforms, you know, and everybody was kind of like, ooh, nice. Or, you know, look what you got wearing. So it was maybe a lighter atmosphere on set, and which translated to this random weird smiling.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
So we go to sick bay and these aliens,
mm-hmm.
We see them for the first time.
There's
three of them. It's so difficult for me to focus on this story because I'm so mesmerized by staring at their extra nostrils.
That four I couldn't, of them.
There's four. And the way that they're oriented, it looks like a waterfall of nostrils or of penne pasta.
Yeah.
Or of earthworms that are sort of dissected at the end or so. It was just like, it's so hard not to stare at that.
What was it?
Without
it was
being
also,
mesmerized.
The other thing I noticed was their hairstyles reminded me a lot of the Kazon. I found that distracting a little bit. I was like, are they Kazon? Or they seemed like a kind of a strange mashup of things that were familiar, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that head stuff, whatever was on their hair, so at times it looked Kazon-esque. At other times, it looked like leaves, you know, like lotus, like, I don't know, some type of leaf. Or it just looked like, it looked like a turtle shell at some point. It looked really kind of hard. Like it was, it just, again, distracting.
It was a little distracting.
But
the three of them are beamed over. One of them dies, though. One of them dies, and the other two, Aiden and Nori, survive. Mm. That's the surviving one's names, and the one that dies is named Tiran. And another thing just to remind people of is that the Doctor now has his mobile emitter, so we will see in this episode for the first time the Doctor not in sick bay or the holodeck. He's, you know, he's able to move around a little more freely, but there he is with Kes treating them. One of them dies, Tiran. The other two survive. And then at the very end, Kes gives one of them a hug when Tiran dies. And it was kind of an awkwardly intimate hug.
I was like, yeah, it's like, why are you doing
that? What's going on? You don't even know each other, and you're sort of caressing, and you're right up in there, and it was a little long. Yeah. And I was like,
yeah.
Little did we know that the body did jump, you know, the spirit had transferred into Kes. So already this was Tiran's spirit that had gone into Kes, but we didn't know that yet. But we knew something was off.
Correct. So the consciousness has already transferred, but we don't know. Right.
Yeah.
So what is, it's definitely weird. We head to Janeway's ready room where the two surviving aliens, Nori and Aiden. So weird that they choose Aiden, which is a very modern name for this alien. Like everybody has a different funky name except for Aiden. And they tell of their survivor story of what happened. And of course it's all made up. We go back to Neelix's Talaxian resort where Neelix is waiting for Kes. Uh-huh. Evidently, they have dinner plans. And we see B'Elanna in her jazzy swimsuit.
Yes, we do.
It's sparkly and clearly Roxanne Dawson has stayed her course when it comes to her physical routine. She obviously still works out.
She looks great. And then she's like, I made a few adjustments of my own. Overcomes the beach body guy with the working out guy with the muscles, all the muscles in all the places, and the barely bikini briefs that he's wearing. And he comes over and he sort of puts a towel around B'Elanna, and then they head off. And she's got a snorkel and a mask in her hand. Again, I'm like, where's the ocean? Like,
where's the ocean? Yeah.
Can we see a little more than this 10 feet of a set?
Anyway. Yeah. Let me talk about a little bit about her modification. So that background actor is actually a friend of mine. That's Marty. That's my friend Marty. And
oh, how funny.
First of all, he's in a later episode. There's an episode called Living Witness, which we haven't reviewed yet, where basically this alien race has a view of Voyager as being a very evil crew. You know, so it was the closest to a mirror episode that Voyager had. So in the museum, you see, you know, the story of the Voyager crew. And this is when we wore the black shirts and we had gloves on, our hair was slicked back, so we looked quite evil. And so the opening scene of one of the early scenes in Living Witness, it's an interrogation scene between Chakotay and Kim are interrogating an alien prisoner. That alien prisoner was Marty. They use Marty for that, where Kim is beating up on him. And but this is the first time that they used Marty as background. I know Marty because he basically, I think I talked about on False Prophets how I had invited a couple of the Ferengi's harem girls over to a club night because a good buddy of mine was a promoter and DJ of an electronica, you know, sort of themed evening. And basically Marty is in that group of people, the promoters and everything. And Marty specifically did a lot of go-go dancing. Like, so they would have male and female go-go dancers like up on pedestals, just dancing to the techno music. And Marty was one of those guys, you know, that they had to do that. Yeah. Super nice guy, really cool, you know, clearly always, you know, like anyone else in Los Angeles, most people in Los Angeles, Marty was trying to make inroads in the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. So his contribution was showing off his superior physique as B'Elanna's boy toy.
Exactly. Very funny. It was,
All right. Transporter room one. Kes is now showing the aliens the transporter room technology, which was really weird. I was like, why is she doing that? Like, what's going on here?
Well, clearly we realize a setup for later.
Yes.
They don't understand transporter technology.
Right.
So they're sort of getting a lay of the land for a later scene where they're going to make a big escape. But she's showing them that. And one thing I noticed is the angle in the transporter room, we never see that angle. They had pulled out the back of the transporter pad and they were shooting like literally from behind it. In fact, it was an odd sort of the way it was framed on the sides. It was it was just very strange to me. It was normally David Livingston does some really interesting visual choices as a director. And there were some really interesting lenses, I guess, and some shots in here. But I felt like a lot of times it was just, I don't know, it didn't seem to fit the story in the moment. The point of view where the camera was not expressing the character's experience.
Yeah.
And that was one thing sometimes I felt like with David Livingston personally as an actor, that sometimes he'd have these ideas in his head, but it would not connect to what my character, if I had a lot to do in a scene and I had some thoughts or, you know, opinions about that, I would feel like David Livingston often as a director was not connected to that, the character's experience. It was very much about like, oh, there's a cool lens I can use, or there's a trick shot I want to do or something in it. And I felt like, you know, in this episode, there were a lot of those moments where I was like, this just doesn't feel like the visual is connected to the character's experience. And this was one simple situation with the transporter room where I'm like, why is that way over there? And they're real tiny and it's a strange angle and there's no point of view. Like literally we should have had a close up of them and then looked back at this transporter and, you know, taken a look at it. Cause that's what the characters were experiencing was, this is what it looks like. But instead we were so far away from them, we didn't really experience it. So that was a moment, you know, just a little moment where I'm like, feel like there's a disconnect, you know, misfire there.
Yeah. I hear you. And, you know, and Livingston has definitely turned in some great episodes. And
yes, absolutely.
I think everybody is allowed, you know, a mess up here and there, or not to be on their game, you know? And
absolutely. I think
you're right. He wasn't really on his game on this one.
Yeah.
So we then, while she's showing them the transporter, she gets interrupted by a message transmission from Neelix, basically saying, hey, we're supposed to have lunch. So Kes meets Neelix back at the Talaxian Resort holodeck.
And by the way, what is Kes eating? Did you look at the food on the table in front of them?
Yes.
It looked like she was eating a dead plant. Like it looked like weeds. It looked like kind of brown. It looked like the dirt was on the plate. And she was eating it with a spatula. It was like it looked like it should have been a fork, but it didn't have fork prongs. It was just flat. Like, do you scoop it up? Is it a trowel because you're eating a plant in the dirt? I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah, it was. But she's more picking at her food. But ultimately, she basically tells Neelix that she just wants to spend time apart. And yeah. Neelix is shocked. Neelix just doesn't understand what's happening.
I thought it was interesting in that scene because clearly, you know, as an audience member, you're realizing that, oh, Kes has been taken over by something. Like something's happened with these aliens. Maybe because I knew she was going to be in a costume later and I kind of knew the direction it was headed. But to me, it seemed that clearly something's gotten inside of her and changed her. And so I was thinking in this scene, like, does Tyrion have Kes's memories plus his, or, you know, because it was just the beginnings of that kind of story observations for me of like at some moments Kes was, or Jennifer Lean was playing Tyrion. Some moments Jennifer Lean was playing Kes. Some, and a lot of moments it was this weird mashup of like, you know, which character is sort of experiencing this moment. It was a bit confusing.
Yeah.
But yeah, she does break up with Neelix, basically says, I need some space. Yeah.
Right. We go to the transporter room, but we also find out from Janeway's voiceover that we are now in orbit of the planet Ilari. At the Altark has sent an invitation to come visit Voyager, who is the ruler of Ilari, but he sends a representative instead. So now we're in the transporter room, and Kes walks in. And just as this rep beams in, Kes decides to pull out a phaser and shoot and kill the representative, as well as killing the transporter chief. I guess he was Lieutenant, no, it was Ensign Martin. So Ensign Martin, we're sorry to see you go. We didn't really get to know you.
I actually looked that up because I was like, who was that was killed? Yeah. Ensign Martin is what it says on some sites.
Right.
The actor was David Christian, is what I saw as I looked into things. And he was not credited as Ensign Martin. So I don't know where that name came from. Maybe he gave it to himself. Because it said on that day, the actor in the transporter room was listed as ND background. So there was no character name. So I think he may have given himself that name, Ensign Martin. But his real name is David Christian. And he was killed along with the representative, and Janeway is subdued,
wrestling with Kes,
or wrestling with Kes, yeah.
And I just want to say that it's so good of you to honor the memory of Ensign Martin by looking up who it was.
I was like,
played
who is,
him in the background.
I was like,
there.
Ensign Martin. Was that a recurrent? Like, I was like, what other episodes was Ensign Martin in? And I'm like, no, there were no other episodes.
No, that was it. Okay, so the fighting ensues. Janeway calls for assistance to the bridge, and they've already beamed off of the ship onto the shuttle, and they're gone.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And while they're in the shuttle, we see that now we know that Kes is basically Tyrion. We see the full, the full Tyrion come out basically, and then they beam aboard Resh, who's a commander of one of the commanders of the forces.
They're on the shuttle heading in. They beam this guy on board, and he's. So you see in the back of the shuttle, this guy beam on board, and he's facing the back of the shuttle. He's turned the wrong way. And he's a big guy, and you see him appear back there. And then all of a sudden he pulls his gun out and points it at the wall. And I'm like, if this is your best man that you put in charge of 400 people, and he sees a wall and he pulls a gun on it, you gotta look for a better guy.
Okay. First of all, clearly the Ilarians, they don't have transporter technology because, it's already established earlier when Kes is showing them, or Kes/Tyrion, they're all nervous. Like, wait a minute. So this thing really works. So they don't know what's going on, but they make it even more obvious that the guy shows up, beamed in, turned around. I'll tell you, the minute he popped in, I went, oh, I remember this scene now, because when I watched this live for the first time when they premiered it back in the 90s, I was so not happy with that casting choice. And I'm so sorry to that actor if he's listening to this, but I was sitting there going, what? I should say this. I'm more upset with David's directing of that actor. I feel like you can, if you're a good director, you can take anybody and make them look decent on camera.
I think.
So I just don't think that David spent any time talking to this guy because he literally, the danger of playing someone who's a tough military guy is playing it so on the nose where you're really talking like this, because I'm the general of the forces. And it's just this exaggerated cliche of a powerful military leader, which this guy clearly, started showing this, whatever he did, I didn't buy it. I just sat there going, no. This is overacting. This is overacting 101. Come on, stop.
I made the same note. It was kind of big. It was just
way too big.
It just, I remember Rick Berman saying to us in that lunch we had before we started. He talked about sort of the royal quality, the regal authoritarian quality that he wanted. But he also he mentioned something about, we have to be careful not to let our performances get too big because the premise, there's people wearing rubber on their face. And for us, for the audience to believe that they're real, the performance needs to be very simple. If we start getting too big and then we got rubber on some people's faces, it's just going to all look silly. Yeah. And I think this is a perfect example of what Rick was talking about, is that our story and characters are already so big with spaceships and rubber aliens and things. Mm-hmm. And then this actor, I think just amplified the...
He turned it up way too high. Or at least I'm going to say David allowed him to turn it up way too high. So I apologize to the actor. I'm going to blame David on this one.
People should have protected him against, all of us need a little help and protection now and then to make sure that we're doing things. There's a moment later on, I'll talk about it, where I wish, someone had pointed out to me a simple line reading for myself. In the scene, he also, Kes uses, or Tyrion uses the telepathy, Kes's telepathy, to make his eyes bleed.
It was his nostrils that were bleeding.
Nostrils. But the thing is, if Tyrion or Kes, with Tyrion inside, realizes in that first scene or this early scene that with telepathy he or she can do that, I don't know why we never did that again in the episode. Like, that's a superpower, dude. Like, you should, if you can just use your brain to make people bleed out of their parts,
yeah,
then why not do it more? Anyway, I thought that was, in my opinion, I don't think you show that kind of superpower and then you never use it again. So, but it was cool. It was cool.
She does use it again because later when she's grappling with Tuvok, she shoots him back using mind control. Like he flies and hits the cave wall, like bam. This is when she's interrogating him later after she's
was
captured
it mind
him.
Control? I can't, maybe I sort of didn't catch that moment that it was her mind. Maybe I thought it was.
Well, I mean, physical. Kes herself wouldn't have been able to take Tuvok and fling him across the, I mean, he flew like 10 feet and slammed up against the cave wall.
But didn't she physically do that? Or
no, I mean, because she doesn't have the physical power to do that.
Yeah,
right?
Maybe
she,
not then. I thought it was physical because of the strength of Tyrion inside the body. I didn't know it was mental. I didn't. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I feel like it wasn't clear to me then.
Okay.
That was all a physical.
No worries. We're now in the briefing room where Demos, the Altark's oldest son and heir, is now explaining that Tyrion's consciousness has taken over Kes. He explains this to Janeway and to everybody else in the briefing room.
I noticed in that scene in the briefing room that Demos, who is the visitor to this space, we're all sitting down and he's waltzing around the room constantly. He's moving around as if he owns the place, as
like he owns the
comfortable.
Place. Yeah.
He's making circles around our briefing room table. Mm-hmm. And I thought, it's strange. Like it felt like it was literally just to move the camera because David Livingston wanted that kind of shot.
Yeah.
Rather than this character would not be, especially with the captain seated and everyone else seated.
Yeah, he's not going to be that comfortable. No,
it just seems strange to me.
You're right. There's no way that he's going to walk around there like it's something that he's done a billion times before. There should be that sort of that sense of unfamiliarity.
It would have been better to me if he had been seated at one end of the table and the captain had just been pacing
around.
Maybe
she's the one that paces around. Exactly.
Just listening. Yeah. But he's the visitor. So it just seems strange to me. Also, the doctor is in that briefing room scene with his mobile emitter for the very first time. Mm-hmm. After Future's End, he's in another space on the ship and we never address it. Which I thought was strange. Like no one ever says, you know, even a little tag at the end of the scene, you know, well, Doc, there's your first meeting out of sick bay. How did it feel or something? Mm-hmm. I thought it was just surprising that we didn't address it there. Also, I was thinking about Bob Picardo, the actor, being in his first briefing room scene. As you know, those scenes took forever to shoot because of all the angles. They were just endlessly tedious to get through those scenes. And I was thinking, there's Bob. He doesn't say anything. Maybe he had one line. I don't remember. And he had to stand there probably the whole time, like we always did. So I thought that was his first experience.
Oh, I bet you. Running through his head, he was like, well, my superior schedule, where I really don't come to work except for twice in each episode, is completely ruined by this mobile emitter. He's now thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to do what everyone else does, which is sit around and wait, buddy.
That's right.
It's definitely a drain on everybody. Okay. On the bridge, Kes and company basically have beamed into the main chamber of the Imperial Hall. That's what we find out. Yeah. Kes takes out all the guards, basically, who evidently have a very slow reaction time. I mean, she just shoots one after another after, like, nobody else shoots at her. It's like, okay. Yeah. And she kills the Altark right there.
And she takes this talisman that she had, she says, or, you know, Tyrion, he says,
right,
give me the talisman. This is something I had. This was taken from me, and puts it around, you know, Kes's body.
His neck,
Tyrion's personality. Yeah. This is where I get so confused and like, wait a minute, it's kind of a possession story, but Kes is still in there. Anyway, and the talisman, this is where I started feeling like it's Game of Thrones. Like, oh, I see. This is like the sun and the throne and the talisman. Mm. Yeah.
Which to me, that looked more like something that a slave would wear. Like that thing that clamps around your neck right there. It didn't look very regal, but it is what it is. That is evidently their type of crown that they wear. It's a neck crown. I'm going to call it that. We're in the main chamber still of the Imperial Hall. And
by the way, at the top of that act, So we come back at the next act, and there's a very cool castle shot that felt like that establishing shot of their palace or whatever. And I bet that was a Dan Curry hand-painted matte shot. He used to do a lot of these, you know, kind of a combination of some electronic stuff, computer stuff.
Yeah.
He would hand paint a lot of that and scan it in. And that looked like Dan's work. It was great.
Yeah, it looked good. It looked really good. While they're in the hall, Tyrion expresses his desire to have everything look like his reign when he was...
He breaks stuff. Yeah, he throws stuff and breaks it at
things. One. Yeah.
Yep.
Amaron is brought in, and that's when Tyrion gives Amaron an offer, you know, join me or, you know, basically suffer the consequences.
Yep.
We're back in the captain's ready room. Demos has chosen to stay on Voyager very wisely. Tuvok and Janeway discuss with Demos plans or strategy.
Mm-hmm.
We're back in the mess hall and the doctor, is it right? Mess hall or are we in sick bay?
No, sick bay. Sick bay.
Okay.
I was like, really?
Mess hall? I wrote mess hall. Yeah, I wrote down mess hall.
You must have been hungry after you watched this.
Yeah, I was. The doctor identifies the transfer mechanism. We find out that it's a cortical implant that was automatically activated at the moment of death. And that basically it enhanced Tyrion's neural pattern and sent it out along the peripheral nerves. The actual transfer took place through bioelectric microfibers in the hand of the recently deceased Tyrion.
Mm-hmm.
This pattern is transmitted through Kes's nervous system and then into her brain. And that the only way to combat this, the doctor comes up with a synaptic stimulator, which will tap into the implant in Kes's body and then remove the alien neural pattern. So that's
so
the
basically
plan.
It's like an implant little thing that's got a, it's got to have direct contact with Kes's body. Mm-hmm. And then it can, if it comes in direct contact, it can remove Tyrion's consciousness from Kes's body.
Exactly.
The prince wants to attack. The you know, the rightful prince wants to attack, but Tuvok offers to go down alone. He says, "No, I think it's better if we, you know, one person could probably get in with this device much easier than you know, if it were a single individual than a big giant contingent of people." So
the Ilarian doctor in a scene right before that basically tries to convince Tyrion, choose another body, choose a willing host, because the headaches that are going on, Tyrion is experiencing Kes fighting him every step of the way.
Yep.
But Tyrion loves these new mind powers that Kes has, and that's the main reason why he says, no, I'm going to stay in this body. I don't care.
Yep.
So Tuvok comes down and infiltrates the Imperial Hall, and he places it on her skin, and I guess it's not long enough. I mean,
it's very quick.
He pulls that thing off like it's nothing, right? And captures Tuvok and places him in this cave-like prison.
But she captures, they capture Tuvok, but before they find out which guard is Tuvok, she goes to a bunch of other guards. And it's so funny because they all have these veils on their face. Mm-hmm. It's like they're veiled princesses, and she's going from guard to guard and like lifting up the veil. And no, it's not you lifting up the veil. And then just before she lifts up the last veil, it is Tuvok jumps her and tries to put this thing on, but it's not long enough.
She's actually lifting up a veil of someone else, and Tuvok comes behind her from around.
Right.
I don't know where he is. Yeah. So she's not actually lifting up Tuvok's veil. Tuvok's already kind of hidden or something.
Yeah. He's hidden somewhere.
Going to the interrogation scene where she's interrogating Tuvok, and my eyes just bulged out when Kes/Tyrion kisses Tuvok. Like, what the heck? I don't remember this.
I know.
I don't remember this at all.
She reads his thoughts and feelings, which I thought was very interesting. She talks about how, you know, he's feeling shame for being caught and feeling this or that, which I thought was very interesting with this sort of extra strong telepathic version that the Tyrion character has in Kes's body. that she was able to sense all these things that Tuvok often feels that he doesn't express. And that was a really interesting side of learning something about Tuvok, that he does feel these feelings of shame or regret or anger or whatever, but he doesn't express them. He's able to keep them in check. So I thought that was very interesting. Yeah. And then she tries to seduce him and kisses him, and then Tuvok places his Vulcan hands on her, and they have sort of this telepathic conversation or fight.
It's interesting because she brings up the fact, or Tyrion brings up the fact, that you've wanted to do this, like, be with me, basically. And right. Then you start thinking, is she really tapping into what Tuvok's thoughts were, or is that was just some ruse to get him to be on her side? You know,
I think it was just manipulation. I think.
Okay, manipulation. Right. So Tuvok does the Vulcan mind meld.
And we hear Kes, the real Kes, saying, "I'm trying to fight help this. Me. I'm trying. Yeah. Help me. Help me." Mm-hmm. And Tuvok says, keep fighting. Keep fighting from within." But Tyrion eventually regains control over Kes's body and disables Tuvok by throwing him across the room. Is that where you meant
it was telepathic? Yes, that part. Yes.
I thought it was physical.
No, because if he's overtaken her body, it's just his consciousness that's in there. His strength doesn't go into her.
We do go to the briefing room from here. I think, do we go right to the briefing room?
Yeah, we go right to the briefing room where Janeway, Chakotay, Paris, Kim, and Neelix. Yeah.
Everybody's sitting so close together. Why are we all sitting so close together?
I didn't notice that.
Oh,
I
did not notice that. Awkward. I thought that, again, David Livingstone sometimes has, I want to put this lens here. Everybody sit close together and overlap shoulders in an odd, stiff way. It was oddly staged, I thought.
I didn't have a problem with that. It didn't bother me, but clearly it bothered you, and you saw that.
Yeah, it just felt staged. It felt fake to me. But I did like that Neelix wants to be a hero. He wants to go to the service and help.
Yes, definitely.
That was great. Tyrion calls, by the way, when we're in the briefing room, gives a friendly warning. You guys need to get out of here. Like, I could destroy you, but just get out of here, because you did save my life and I'm not a horrible person. And we do notice the headaches are getting worse.
Mm-hmm. And Tyrion refuses to fall asleep, but he still falls asleep at sitting up. And that's in the dream state is where Kes confronts him. And now we're in Kes's quarters and we realize that this is going to be a battle that will continue.
This was an odd directorial moment for me too. I felt like, it pushed into Kes's eye and then it pulls out of Tyrion's eye. And now they're in this dream conversation, but it was unclear to me that it was a dream conversation. It felt almost like it needed to be much more stylized in the design or the costume or the lighting or the something. It just felt like any other scene except for the pushing into the eye.
Not your cup of tea.
No.
Well, basically Tyrion is saved by the Ellari doctor. The Ellarian doctor pulls Tyrion out of that stupor. And he's like, I could barely pull you out. And then he keeps giving Tyrion the suggestion, you really need to choose another body. Mm-hmm. Tyrion flips out and decides, well, time to use my mind powers to make your six nostrils bleed. And so he kills him. Clearly, he takes that Ellari doctor out.
And he says, I'm stronger than ever. To an empty room, to nobody there.
Yeah, to an empty room. And then we go back to, it's interesting because we keep going from one scene to another scene in the same setting. So we went from where he kills the Ellari doctor, and then there's basically a transition to yet again inside the Imperial Hall, a scene inside there where Kes talks to everyone and says Tyrion, as Kes, says that he's going to marry Amaron to really kind of make his rule legitimate by marrying the son of the Altarch. And Tyrion wants Amaron and Nori to be close. So you have this little side hush conversation where he's suggesting basically a polyamorous relationship. He's like, I want all of us, all three of us to be close. And I thought, whoa, look at that. Pushing the envelope there, Voyager, with the polyamorous relationship suggestion.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah, it gets very confusing, a lot of it. It's polyamorous. It's very fluid sexually, whether it's Kes's female body or Tyrion's male subconscious personality, or it was just hard to tell what's what and who's who. But yes, there's that suggestion. And then I love that we see Paris rescuing Tuvok. We cut to Tuvok in his cell, and the away team begins their attack, and there's Paris by himself trying to save.
I like that, Robbie, because for me, this is almost like tracking from the end of Future's End, because of that odd couple relationship between Paris and Tuvok that was established there. And now they sort of bring it into this episode with Paris saving his odd couple buddy, Tuvok, from prison. So I kind of like that, the fact that you guys were paired up again in this episode.
It was a strange little thing, because I come into his cell, get him, and then we go through this cave tunnel, and I go to step over somebody. I assume I knocked them out earlier.
Yeah, that's weird. You and clearly shot that guy. So it's like, why is he conscious again?
He all of a sudden is strong enough to not only grab me by the leg and trip me, but to engage me in some fight when I already just took him out moments before. It was an odd beginning to that little action fight sequence, but it was fun to do my own stunts. I always like doing stunts.
Yeah.
It reminded me that Friday at work, when I was directing for Turner and Hooch, we had a stuntman go over and fall and hit the ground, and he broke his collarbone Friday.
Oh.
And this was a stuntman taking the fall. So when I saw that scene where the stuntman grabbed me and I fell over, I was like, wow. Often as an actor, I would do stunts. I'm not saying it was super brave of me or anything, but like accidents can happen. And so, I get why sometimes with shows, you know, when I was an actor, I wanted to do all my stunts, or I know you did too. You love doing your own stunts, but they would tell us, nope, we've got a stunt double. They're going to do this part and you'll just do the, you know, the close-up part.
Yeah.
Because anything can happen. So,
agreed.
That was a nice scene. I like that little rescue Tuvok. And then we go back into the hall, and there's Janeway and Neelix and the rest of our team showing up.
Chakotay and Demos.
Yep.
You guys aren't with them though, right? Their attack is just Janeway, Neelix, Chakotay, and Demos. Right?
Exactly. Yep.
And that's where when I came up with my my limerick, one of my lines was Neelix so spry, right? Because this is the attack scene where Neelix like jumping on top of the table, and I thought he was gonna do a forward roll off of that. I'm like, what the heck is going on? But it just, he leads the charge. and I really was excited to see that was probably my favorite.
I know, me too.
That's my favorite moment in this entire episode. Why? Because this is truly the redemption scene for Neelix after he totally just chickened out in False Prophets against the Ferengi. And he's like, oh no, don't kill me. Oh, please. And it's just like, Neelix is just charging into the face of death.
You're right. You're absolutely right. That's great. We see Neelix finally corner Tyrion or Kes in Kes's body. Mm-hmm. And he sets his phaser to stuns her, and then goes over and puts the
synaptic stimulator.
Synaptic stimulator, and the subconscious is removed. Mm-hmm. Or we think it's removed, but what we didn't realize is in a moment before that happened, the personality was put into
Amaron,
thank you, the younger prince.
Mm-hmm. The hands touched for a split second, and I thought, wait a minute, did they really transfer? Yes, they did transfer right there.
Yeah. They transferred very quickly in that split second, and they figure that out, and they put the device on Amaron's face, and he's finally downloaded out of Amaron and everyone else and removed. So
Robbie, here's the question.
Yes.
Where did Tyrion go? Is he inside the stimulator?
I thought he was inside the stimulator, that he was removed. Okay. Or yeah. is he dead? Or is
or he... Is he gone, gone? Is he into the ethos? Is he just scattered amongst the cosmos? What is he? Look at that. I'm already rhyming now. Ethos, cosmos. Yeah. So I don't know.
I don't know. I assumed it was downloaded into that thing. So we've got a little here in our sick bay.
He's on a shelf.
We go back on Voyager. Tuvok's meditating with Cass. She says, you know, she doesn't think she can go on with her life. With everything that's happened. And he's like, you know what? You're not responsible for what happened there. But Tuvok says, you are not the same person. And you're going to have to decide, you know, where you go with your life. And I thought that was an interesting little foreshadowing of Kes's character down the road of, you know, her sort of taking ownership and deciding what to do and all those things. So
this is my process with every episode that we recap.
Yeah.
And I start thinking immediately, what's the theme? What's the theme? And I go through and watch the story and I keep thinking, what's the theme? And really, I didn't have anything to talk about until Tuvok in Kes's quarter when he's meditating with her. And he talks about, you know, how you are no longer the same person and the course of your life will change as a result. And then the course is up to you, you know, what direction you want to take it in. And so for me, the theme really is about Kes was in a major traumatic experience. Her brain was being basically taken over by another consciousness, another entity. And she's having to deal with fighting him and just high trauma all throughout. Right.
Yeah.
So really Kes is a victim of post traumatic stress disorder. It's a PTSD thing right here for me. And I really feel that the theme there is how to come to grips with that. How to accept the fact that you are not the same person. Cause a lot of times you try to fight that, you know, like, no, I'm still who I was before battle, before the traumatic experience. But no, I mean, you have to accept that you have gone through that. And that's the first step to moving on with your life is acceptance of the traumatic situation and understanding that you know, through no fault of your own, you were placed in this situation. And to move on, you must accept first. So I think that's really the life lesson that I got from this. What about you? What did you find it?
My life lesson was power hungry is bad. That's my life lesson.
Okay.
That, you know, that this sort of hunger for power where you're willing to do anything is just, it's bad. I don't know.
So it's a cautionary tale.
Of
that, right?
Like, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Of letting your
power corrupts. And,
yeah.
Yep. Power corrupts, and you see it in every phase of life. Like, I mean, it doesn't matter what it is, what occupation, what business that you're in. Power has always corrupted people, and that is the most difficult thing to step outside of yourself and then acknowledge that, oh my gosh, I'm changing for the worse.
That's
a harder task than most people can handle, to be perfectly honest, you know, because when you're wrapped up in that situation of having that power, you feel like you can do no wrong and you feel like you aren't doing anything wrong, that you are being a good guy, you know? Like, I love how Italian mafioso guys call themselves good guys because they consider themselves good. They don't consider themselves doing bad things, but you know, so a cautionary tale. That's a good lesson.
Bad guys never think they're doing bad things.
No, they never.
Every character that you play thinks they're doing the right thing. They really do.
You know, for the good of all, right?
Yeah, I always felt that as an actor. Like, you couldn't play a bad guy. You couldn't play a bad guy who is aware that they're doing bad things. You can only play a bad guy who thinks they're doing what is absolutely appropriate.
And that actually goes back to when we were talking about the guest star that played Resh and how maybe, not maybe, but his performance was so large. It was so big. It was too big that I almost feel that Jennifer in that first scene, when she's in a couple of scenes, I don't feel like she needed to affect that voice. Like, she didn't have to get all like that. You know, she could have just, she's the good guy. You know what I'm saying? What we just talked about. Because if you play it that way, then it doesn't cause you to create voices to sort of match that character. And I felt like Jennifer at times was a little guilty of that, where she would fall into that. Well, I've got to have mm-hmm. this really resonant low voice. But the reality is, if your consciousness is overtaken by somebody else, you're still going to talk the way you talked before you were taken over, because it's still your voice. It doesn't belong to that guy. As good of a job as Jennifer has done in the past, and as good of a job as she did in this episode, which is definitely not easy to pull this off, mm-hmm. I did feel that there were times that she could have not tried so hard in terms of affecting her voice to make it sound really resonant or really low, you know?
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
I feel like I remember in filming this episode that Jennifer really made a big leap to play this role, to play this kind of, you know, horrible character, this power hungry, authoritative, you know, intimidating character. I feel like I remember Jennifer's personality changed a bit as we were shooting it. I remember like seeing her, like she was, not that she was in character all the time, but a little bit of that. Right. I remember vaguely like the crew kind of saying, you know, commenting and noticing like, oh yeah, Jennifer's like, she's in character today. And really.
Jennifer, would you like a snack from the craft services table? Get away from me. Like, yeah, exactly. No, yeah, I don't remember that happening.
No, but I think it was a little bit of like, people could feel like she had to stay in that sort of power
intensity.
Character.
Yeah.
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 Okay. So Ensign Martin dying, the uncredited Ensign Martin I think that brings the total of our crew to like 12 that have died so far.
Someone will do this running count for us. They're going to go back and get this down for us, but that sounds about right.
We've about had 12 people that we've lost. We don't have a big ship, so we got to be careful.
No.
Or we got to start having a lot more babies and bringing this total up. Anyway, that was great. It was great to watch. I'm glad it's over. Let's move on to another episode.
Oh, okay. 0 to 10. 0 to 10. What's your rating?
It's hard because I don't want to, I appreciate the work that Jennifer did. I appreciate the thought behind the story and the writing. And I like I said, I often love David Livingston's direction, but not this time.
Yeah.
I would give this a 2, honestly, a 2 out of 10.
Whoa. Oh, you smacked that down there, didn't you?
Not my favorite.
I'm not going to go that low, Robbie.
Okay.
I can't go low. Can't go that low. I'm going to give it a 5. So I'm going to knock it up a few notches. So,
okay. Okay.
That's all. You know.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, guys, for tuning in.
Yes. Thank you very much. If you're a Patreon patron, stick around for your bonus material, and for the rest of you, we will see you next week
when we review The Q and the Gray.
The Q and the Gray is next week.
It is.
Oh, that'll be fun.
I got a lot to talk about that one.
Yeah, I didn't know that was next week's, but now I do. So that'll be fun.
All right, guys. See you later.
All right. Bye.